Star Wars Action News presents Republic Forces Radio Network, bringing you coverage of Star Wars, The Clone Wars. Our hosts will review the toys, books, comics, games, and all things related to the Clone Wars animated series. And after each new episode airs on Cartoon Network, our hosts will recap and review the show. And we want to hear your thoughts on The Clone Wars. Call us at 415-508-JEDI every Saturday after a new episode, and your call may be played on the air.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Republic Forces Radio Network, here to discuss all things Star Wars animation and Star Wars television in general. And we are here this week to talk about Plan of Descent. And joining me tonight, as they have been for this whole story arc, are Jen.
Hey, guys.
Nathan.
Hello.
And Master Collect-Em-All, Barrent.
Hey, Rockstar. Hey, everybody. It's Master Collect-Em-All from the forums, your Swan Holocron Enhancer, and your Marvelicious Toys Enhancer, which you can find at MarveliciousToys.com.
All right. We are going to talk about this week's episode, part three of the Umbara Saga. Before we get going in our discussion, let's go around and see what everybody thought so we know who's on what side before we get going. And why don't we let Nathan kick us off this week?
Oh, wow. Well, you know, this is a series that's had a lot of ups and downs. When it's been really good, it's been quite good. When it's been really bad, it's been fairly abysmal. But I have to say that I think this week is probably my single favorite episode of The Clone Wars thus far. It was excellent. It was everything that I would expect. It's got the references to the films. It's got great characterization. Even between clones, who you would think are more alike than any other characters, you can tell distinctively between the different ones. They're very vibrant characters in terms of being able to show their personality a lot more than we tend to have seen before. Krell comes off as a distinct sort of villainous character, but he's got that light side edge to him and what he's hoping to do with the war. A lot more complexity to this episode. Everything from visuals to characterizations, everything else. Mike Michnovetz, who wrote this trilogy, also wrote the Citadel arc. And if this is any indication of what he can do, he should write more for the show. I'm not going to say this is my single favorite arc overall ever yet. It probably will be, but we've been fooled before. Because the first two episodes of the Mortis trilogy had a lot of promise, only for it to wind up going down the tubes and all falling apart with the logic used in the third. But unless something crazy happens next episode that makes this entire thing fall apart, which I do not see happening with Mitch Demetz at the helm, I think this is probably going to go down as the pinnacle of Clone Wars, at least up to this point.
Alrighty, Jen?
I'm with Nathan. This is probably my favorite episode to date, and I'm surprised to say that because I didn't really think we'd be getting that out of this season. I thought maybe this would just be a subpar season, but I was blown away by this episode. It was really pretty intense. There was a lot going on. It was visually gorgeous. Some of those space battles looked like they could probably hold up pretty well to some of the stuff in Revenge of the Sith almost. It was amazing. I could tell the clones apart perfectly. Like, they all had very distinct like personalities, that even like the way they spoke was different enough that you could tell them all apart, and it was really obvious, and they were all each really individual, and I'm just fascinated by this, where this is going. I really can't wait for next week, and if Krell does not die, I'm going to be really angry, because they did a really good job of making him just detestable. I loathe this person. I really, really want him to get gunned down or something horrible to happen to him.
All right, Barrent.
If the first episode was a cracker saltine, the second episode was a Ritz, this was a whole loaf of bread, okay? And I'm thinking the last episode, we might find we have a banquet here. I mean, this episode was great. It was great. I love to hate Krell, you know, and I feel kind of, it's a little guilty pleasure of mine because, you know, you want to like him because he's a Jedi. You want him to be redeemed somehow, but he is just coming across unredeemable, you know, everywhere from pushing clones out the way. You know, he was kicking clones last episode. Now he's pushing them out the way, and he's continually throwing them into harm's way to the chagrin of Obi-Wan Kenobi. You know, we finally see a Jedi to kind of lift their eyebrow at some of the decisions he's making. I really hope it's going to be a big payoff on next week's episode. But as far as this week's episode goes, I have to agree with you, Nathan. I have to agree with you, Jen, that the clones are getting a lot more characterization to them. We're getting to know who they are. You know, the clones at first were just kind of these drones that had no personality. Now we're finding out that a lot of the clones have flaws, you know, just like humans, because they are human, you know. And the just what we're finding from Rex, you know, just what they've done with this last arc for Rex is kind of what they kind of did for Ahsoka last season. You know, they are really fleshing him out, and I'm really starting to think of him as my captain, you know. And he's just not interchangeable with Cody anymore. You know, he just used to be kind of interchangeable, whether it was Cody, whether it was Rex. Now Rex is a real person. You know, Rex is a real character that really means a lot and is really being established as someone important in the Star Wars universe. So this absolute episode is amazing. It's just on par with the rest of them. And I just have to ask myself, if they can give us these episodes, why do we get some of the ones that we get that, you know, aren't held up to this high standard? It just kind of baffles me. You know, if they can go ahead and make these kind of things, why give us, you know, Wizard of Oz? But I guess we'll talk about that at the season wrap up. But very enjoyable.
All right. Well, you know, I think you guys are all crazy. I hated this episode. I think this is probably my least favorite episode. No, this was by far, I think, probably my favorite episode. This has been my favorite arc, and I'm with Baron. I have to say, I think this is what Clone Wars should have been most of the time. We should have had mostly these kind of stories, not a Jedi who's killing off clones, but stories that focus on the clones in this war, not just the occasional with rookies or ARC troopers, but more of this with the very sparse droids or Ahsoka-based episode, or God forbid, Senate. This should have been what the Clone Wars was. Now, the timing on this particular arc, like I've said from the first episode of it, the timing for this is good as far as it needs to be now, because of how we feel about these clones and how they've grown on us from episodes where we have gotten to see them. But one thing, and Baron brought this up, and we'll just go ahead straight into this. One thing that I just am blown away by in this arc is Krell. Here is a character who is a light side Jedi. He should be, for all intents and purposes, the hero. We always want to root for the Jedi. I mean, some of us do enjoy the dark side, and we root for the villains. But the main focus of the story, the hero should be the light side Jedi. And they're giving us a light side Jedi who we hate. He is as big as, if not more so, the villain than the Umbarans in this story arc. And I just think this is really an impressive stroke. This is an amazing line for them to go down in this show.
That's always been something that the EU fought a lot with, that they never seemed to really give us much of an explanation for, which is, why is it that you would have clones just blindly following Order 66 whenever it happens? Why wouldn't they take Order 66 and maybe tell a Jedi, oh, hey, by the way, on the off chance you're ever accused of rebellion, we are programmed, so to speak, we are ordered to off you on a second's notice. And up until now, it seems that every time they added more distinctiveness to the clones' personalities, and kudos to D. Bradley Baker, he does an amazing job of making these clones sound different. Maybe I wouldn't be able to tell them differently in like a sound lineup, but just seeing them in conversation, you can tell as it's jumping back and forth within the conversation, even if you're not looking at the screen per se. But every time we get more characterization for these clones, it adds to that question of how would they just blindly follow such an order later on in the war. If they're thinking about themselves or thinking of themselves as individuals more, individually looking at the situation and assessing it, why would they just blindly start killing these Jedi without any kind of other confirmation or any other information? You could say, well, they're just soldiers, they're just following orders. Yeah, but that makes them more stormtroopers. That makes them the more sort of Nazi-esque, I was just following orders, than the type of heroic clones we're seeing throughout this series. Finally, we're being given a Jedi that slowly starts to make it more clear to us why this would have, or perhaps in some cases should have, been followed. You gotta wonder, though, is Krell symptomatic of something that is going on across the Order? We just don't tend to see it, and that's what makes it such an easy thing for the clones to cross that line and do Order 66? Or is Krell the one exception that proves the rule that all the Jedi are great, and there's no reason for the clones to ever even think about offing them, except for just, well, I was just following orders? I would like to see this become a theme they use more often.
Well, Nathan, are the clones heroic? I mean, they might be heroic in the EU, but what we see in the films and what we see in the Clone Wars, they're not really heroic. I mean, granted, we could say Rex is heroic, but most of the time when they're helping people, they're complaining. They don't want to help. This is another planet like this. You know, are they heroic? I mean, really, they're just kind of soldiers that are following orders. I couldn't say that they're heroic. I could say maybe they're good soldiers, but they're not doing anything heroic. We're invading a planet here. You know, they're doing a lot of space battles. They're brave. But as far as like heroic, would they risk their neck if they didn't have to for someone else? I can't say they would.
Isn't that what they're doing? Is they're risking their necks for somebody else? That's all they do, is they're fighting somebody else's war. This is not something that they feel passionate about. This is, they have to do this. So I don't know if that necessarily makes them heroic or not, but they're definitely fighting someone else's war. So I don't know. I think they are pretty heroic. And at least in Attack of the Clones, that's probably the only part I like in that movie, is when the clones show up and they save the day and they kick all kinds of butt.
I would have to agree with you on the Attack of the Clones. Okay, I can concede you that point. They did save the day. They were heroic then. But I think that's where it stops. And I think that they're just like what Nathan said. They're Nazis, you know, as far as, you know, the Nazi soldiers might not have all been evil people, but they were just following orders. And that's how I see them now. I constantly see the clones as stormtroopers, especially when, you know, they're doing things like this where they're fighting. This is one of a few arcs where I don't see them like this, where I actually see them as thinking, caring, individual humans, you know, that they're not just, you know, blind, computerized drones that are just following orders blindly. So, yes, I would have to agree with you, Jen. In Attack of the Clones, they were heroic, and I think that was on purpose so we could get behind them and watch them fall and descend into stormtroopers, into what they become.
Barrett, you mentioned it might be an EU thing. That's kind of why I prefaced it with the fact that the EU has trouble grasping onto this idea. What we see, I guess heroic is not the word I'm looking for, but when clones are made into the protagonists against a system that is discriminatory or against a system that doesn't value them as individuals, that builds them up as protagonists and that builds them up as sympathetic characters, whether we're talking Karen Travis's books with, you know, Delta and Omega Squad, with the Republic Commandos, whether we're talking about this series with, you know, Rex and Cody and Fives and all these other characters, or if we're talking about even someone like Alpha in the comics, the early ARC trooper. Any time that a character is made into your point of view protagonist character, that sort of lends that level of credibility to thinking of them as either heroic or, hey, they're the good guys, however you want to put it. They're certainly not made out to be the villains throughout the saga. And by the time we get to Revenge of the Sith, they have that one moment where they become sort of the ultimate villains against the Jedi, or the ultimate tools of a villain against the Jedi. But we don't see an evolution to that. It's sort of a flick the switch, give the order, and now they're out there killing people. And that's always been something that bothered me a little bit, to say, okay, yeah, it makes sense. This was something that was embedded within them, maybe programmed in them. It's something that they were taught from the beginning. They must follow orders, and Order 66 was an order. But at the same time, you got to kind of scratch your head saying, why would every single one of them have necessarily followed this? And beyond a few instances in the EU, it looks like most of them, you know, go right ahead and follow it. That also begs the question, and I'm hoping someday we'll get an answer to this in this series, but I highly doubt we ever will. Notice what we see when Order 66 goes down. Some of these clone troopers are answering to Sidious with his hood up, all wrinkle-faced, not saying, yes, Chancellor, but yes, my lord. They are answering as if they are answering orders from a Sith Lord, not from the Supreme Chancellor. I would love to see some level of explanation given to what drives sort of the situation within the Grand Army of the Republic to make these clones more pliable and more willing to kill the Jedi who have been their commanders and their comrades in arms for, what, 3 years at this point? I doubt they'll ever do it, but I'd really like to see something like that.
So I've always thought of the Order 66 thing as kind of like the old stories of the sleeper agents. They have a phrase that just turns them completely and just takes them to another part of their brain where they're almost a completely different person. So that's something that never gave me too much second thought.
That kind of makes sense, though, Dan. You know, I kind of can go with that. You know, instead of it, that kind of would explain why you don't see the evolution of them, you know, turning into stormtroopers, although I see it. But that kind of makes sense because You know, they don't even hear when they're talking about Descent, they're not talking about, you never hear them talk about Order 66. You know, we can pull the Order 66 on them, you know, because if they knew about Order 66 now, or, you know, they know about it now, obviously it's part of their order, but they never talk about it, you know, not even amongst themselves when nobody else is listening. So I could go with that. I could go with the Manchurian Candidate type of deal where it's kind of like hypnotism, or it's in their brain and it turns on a switch.
You could also say that it may even be just a matter of these are newer clones being put out. Again, within the EU, they eventually go to, you know, Spartae cylinders, try to get clones out faster and all that kind of stuff. But even if you're just taking a look at this particular series here, one of the clones, and they do a great job differentiating them by the different facial markings and such. You've got Tup, the one, you know, the Tupac clone from last week. Tup that has that teardrop and the top knot and such is the one who is willing to go along with Dogma after very, very little convincing to turn in Fives and Jesse and Hardcase when they go up to the ship. And the episode guide on StarWars.com specifically points out that Tup is a relative rookie. He has much less experience than any of these others. This is one of his first battles. And you got to wonder, if eventually we see enough clone casualties, are we going to wind up in a situation that by Revenge of the Sith, most of the clones out there haven't had enough time to develop those individual personalities. So, of course, they're just going to blindly follow orders because they just don't know any better at that point. Again, I'd like to see it, but I don't know if they're ever going to go quite that far in that direction. I mentioned how Dee Bradley Baker does a good job with the voice work of these. Did anybody else find the voice work for Krell to be much better this week? This is Dave Fennoy. He's the guy who also played Toy Dampner in the Racer video game, and he played Lando Calrissian back in X-Wing Alliance. But it seems like he's doing a pretty good job, at least in this episode, of moderating the tone. He's not all gruff and griping and cranky all the time, but he still has that level of menace to his voice, even when he's saying things that seem like he's just regularly speaking with authority, not necessarily speaking down to somebody. I thought his voice work was much better this week.
I did notice that I was, for the majority of the episode, with the exception of the call from Obi-Wan, it is pretty much all Dee Bradley Baker and Dave Fennoy. So really, Dave had his work cut out for him as far as keeping up with Baker. And he did hold his own. You can almost see hear an underlying current of psychosis under Krell's voice. He's just on the verge of snapping. And based on our preview, I think we're going to see that next week.
For crossing me, you will pay the price. And where's that fire that was in my eyes last week? Somebody bring up the fire.
Well, Dave Fennoy, what I can say about, Dee Bradley Baker is doing an amazing job. And I have to concur with you that he is, you can almost close your eyes and you can tell it was Tup talking. You can definitely tell when it's Rex talking. But when it comes to Jesse and Fives and the rest of them, it's just the little things that he can do with his voice that makes each of them sound a little bit different, you know, and have their own personality. And it's crazy, you know, Tup sounds a little timid, you know, Dogma kind of sounds holier than thou. And, you know, Fives is just kind of upset all the time. You know, he's upset with what's going on. And Rex sounds like Rex. So he's doing a great job. But as far as Dave Fennoy goes about Krell, I kind of like the fact that he sounds like Obi-Wan's buddy from the diner. He sounds like Dexter Jexter, you know, with kind of that garbled, you know, stuff maybe caught in your throat, kind of like a, I don't know, maybe like a toad sounding like. You know, he kind of sounds like Dexter Jexter, but he sounds more of a, like you said, an evil, you know, a Dexter Jexter ready to pop. And they're doing a great job, and it does sound, you know, he's really getting into his character. It's like he knows who his character is supposed to be now. You know, it's not supposed to be just this gruff Jedi barking orders, but he's definitely having a lot of depth into his performance. So all around, the performances are getting better.
He really does make the character sound like that classic idea where if you have a villain, most villains don't think of themselves as villains. They think of what they're doing in justifiable terms. He brings that across with Krell when that is a very difficult thing to pull off, and I'm not sure we've gotten that as much the last couple of episodes. The last couple of episodes, he just sort of sounded verbally abusive. Here, he sounds like a person who is confident in his justifications and in the process is going down that wrong path. And the voice work actually pulls that off, not just the characterizations. I think you could listen to that performance without seeing the visuals and still get that same impression, which is a high calling indeed.
Speaking of how well these characters were done, now, back in The Deserter, we were introduced to this small group of clones, and we've kind of been with them, or they've been with us for this arc too. And this week, unfortunately, we saw the end of Hard Case. Now, we knew we were going to lose somebody this arc. We kind of had a suspicion it might be Fives, and judging, again, by the preview, it very well may be Fives next week. But Hard Case, I did not see coming. Well, maybe I did kind of see it coming because he's insane. But the way he went, that kind of caused me to sit up and be like, oh, no. I can't believe they just did that. This was actually really well done and impressive. And Dee Bradley Baker had given us a character that we really cared about.
I saw Hardcase's death coming from a mile away, actually, because I liked him. And they always kill clones that I like. But as soon as they were going off in a group of three, I was fairly certain he was going to die. Because they seemed to have something planned for Fives, and if anyone was gonna die, it was gonna be Hard Case. I was kind of bummed to see him go, but at least he had like a cool heroic death. But they always kill the ones I like.
It's one of those things that you could sort of predict coming. You've got the three clones that glow up, you've got Fives, you've got Hard Case, you got Jesse, I believe it was, and you send all three of those up. Fives we care about, but this would have been a kind of a crappy end for the character. I mean, it would have been a heroic end and a sacrificial end, but at the same time, it would have cut off any chance of him showing up and have any further drama with him and Kreller, between him and Rex in the next episode. So he probably wasn't likely to bite it just yet. And between Jesse and Hardcase, it doesn't seem like we got much characterization out of Jesse. He was one of the lesser used clones, it seems like, in this one. You got Dogma with sort of that V across his face. You know, Hardcase has the tattoo on the side of his head. Kicks has the lightning bolts. Tup has the teardrop. Jesse's the one with the symbol. Jesse got a lot more play in this episode when they were talking about the possibility of the mission, so you figured he was going to be one on the mission. But beyond that, it didn't seem like they really played up the character all that much. So yeah, when those three went up, if any of them were going to die, as much as it would have made sense for Fives, because we keep saying we're expecting the last domino to fall, Hardcase was probably the more obvious choice when the three of them went up there.
Oh, man, it totally caught me by surprise. I thought it was going to be Jesse, because we've known Jesse from The Deserter. You know, I think that's where he was introduced. You know, correct me if I'm wrong, but we know him from there. They really do not give him a lot of speaking roles. You know, they really didn't develop his character as much as they developed Hard Case in this arc. You know, they really developed Hard Case as being this gung-ho, heroic, Chen, I'll give you that, very heroic, very brave, not afraid to follow Krell's orders. You know, this'll be fun, you know, when he gets into battle. You know, he comes out blasting with that, you know, with that Terminator gun, with that Jesse Ventura Terminator gun, and he's very likable. You know, I thought it was Jesse that was going to run his ship into the main reactor, which I mentioned before as being the Achilles heel that they've never changed. You know, Anakin's destroying a main reactor in A New Hope. You know, it's the main reactor that takes out the Death Star. It's this main reactor that needs to be ray shielded, which they kind of finally did in this one. They ray shielded it, but it was still the Achilles heel. And I like the fact that they use Anakin's story, that General Skywalker told the clones the story. You know, I just imagined Anakin sitting back kind of bragging about when he was a kid and he destroyed this, you know, this separatist ship. You know, it's like, when did that story come out? You know, by the way, I'm this big, huge hero, you know. But it took me by surprise. Hard Case, when he sacrificed himself, it really tugged at my heart, man. It really did. I felt like, oh, man, you know, he's one of my favorite clones now. You know, he sacrificed himself for the greater good. And I'm not a religious man, okay? But the whole thing about redemption, you know, the whole thing about getting into heaven or whatever is sacrifice. You know, that's what you do. That's what you do to redeem yourself, is self-sacrifice. And for him to sacrifice himself for the good of the mission and not blink one eye about it, and he says that line, "Go, you guys, live to fight another day." It's like, I got chills. I'm like, Hard Case, Hard Case, Hard Case.
I'm right there with you. I love the idea that this was based on Anakin's story. You know, you got to figure at some point, you know, you're like, hey, you guys are whining about what you guys can do at 10 years old. You're bragging about what you can do at 10 years old. Let me tell you what I did at 9, my friends, you know, because, you know, technically the clones are 10 years old at this point, albeit 20 by by actual physical, appearance and such. But yeah, it was great to see that instead of it just being something that was coincidentally the same, to actually make that reference. There were some other great references to the films in here. You know, you've got your, who is this? What's your CT number? I'm finding myself getting a better appreciation for The Phantom Menace thanks to it now being on Blu-ray. And alongside that, this gives me a better sense of, I can appreciate what Anakin does in The Phantom Menace more because here we're seeing it in a much more grittier war type of context. Very much like I can appreciate it more knowing what was happening outside the ship with the shield reactors and stuff like that with the character out of the Battle for Naboo video game, for instance. One thing that stands out to me also from a referencing standpoint was you got that great moment, and it took me a while to figure out what it was that was getting me about this. The tactical droid, whenever that attack is going on, when the ships fly into it, the tactical droid says it's impossible that they could have gotten aboard, and he cites odds of 10,003 to 1 that could have happened. And my first response was, okay, yeah, that's improbable, not impossible, if there are actual odds that it really could happen. Second thing was I started thinking of that tie-in to C-3PO and your 3,720 to 1, but then it struck me that what we're getting is that impossible, nothing can get through our shields, which goes right back to The Phantom Menace and the same thing when Anakin pulled it off. It was a nice mirroring of those things across the series. So yeah, very, very well done. Mick Nevitz did a great job of piecing, again, all the things we expect, and references to the films and connections there is one of the things we expect.
Yeah, I really liked the discussion of Anakin's achievement and the kind of vague callback to the Han Solo conversation with Krell. I was so glad that one of the clones did not go with the boring conversation anyway follow-up. That would have been taking it a little bit too far. But all in all, you're right. The reminders from both the prequel and original trilogies were handled actually very well this week.
How funny would it have been, though, if Fives would have said, everything's fine here, how are you?
That would have been funny.
That would have been funny.
Man, Krell would have been giving him 4 middle fingers for that. He doesn't seem like the guy who would have taken, that kind of humor in quite the spirit of an Imperial flunky.
So we've kind of jumped all over this episode, really. But all in all, this was really a fairly straightforward. There weren't a lot of different paths that we could be exploring with this episode. Krell has a terrible idea of marching the clones straight towards, we've gone from underground tanks, giant tanks, to now into oncoming missiles. This guy really hates clones. I think even the clones mentioned that themselves, apparently. He rejects a perfectly good plan, and now we find that not only is he angry that the plan was carried out, even though the plan worked, the 2 surviving clones are going to face court-martial.
This is a man who cannot waste clones on what he calls frivolous adventures. He'll waste them on anything else. He'll play the war for attrition, or war of attrition, on anything else, as long as it's under his terms. But he won't waste them on frivolous adventures where, 2, 3 of them could die, as opposed to dozens or hundreds. It really gives you a sense again, if this is meant to tie back at all into that World War I style of warfare, it's a perfect, perfectly analogous thing to some of the commanders in the field at that time, as we mentioned last week. Not willing to think creatively and lose maybe a couple of lives, but willing to still forge ahead when it's going to mean many more.
You know, what I find about Krell, what I find very interesting about his whole personality and the way he does not have any mistrust of the clones, whether that is his ego, where he feels like I'm the general and I know what I'm doing and you're just clones, or whether that's a weakness in him because the clones are continuously lying to him. They're blowing holes in the air dome thing, and they lie to him and say it was a malfunction. They were decrypting the codes and it blew a hole. And then he asks Captain Rex, about the spaceships that flew away. Captain Rex lies to him again and says, I sent him on a reconnaissance mission. And he says, well, I want that report. It doesn't even cross his mind that the clones are disobeying him until the end. And is that a fault in him? I just don't understand that. If you think of someone going evil, you would think that they would have plan B and plan A. If they start to be insubordinate, if I find that there's going to be a mutiny, I have a plan to deal with that. But it doesn't seem to cross Krell's mind at all that the clones would be disobeying orders from him on purpose, you know, even after all of these things are kind of going nutty. And I just want to ask, what do you guys think about that? Is he blind to his own power, or is that a fault in his leadership? I just don't understand that.
Actually, this kind of struck me two different ways. One, either he is so bent that he wants to have a reason to wring the life out of some clones with his own bare hands that he's letting them hang themselves and just feeding them rope, kind of like with the Rex's, I want that report when it gets back, just waiting for there not be a report so he'd have reason to beat the life out of a few clones. Or he thinks the clones are so simple that they can't actually be plotting behind his back.
I get the feeling that he's had clones plotting behind his back, because that's why he keeps them under such a short leash kind of thing, because his first response to Fives and Jesse disobeying is kill them. They have to be removed. Some clones, he's seen it before, some clones are defective. They have to get put down. And I'm wondering if he kind of operates under the method of, you know, cow everybody below you, and anybody who disagrees, just cut their head off. And that leaves just the obedient ones.
He seems to me like one of these leaders who he sort of sees what he wants to see. And I think, of course, there are times where it seems like he is seeing what's happening with the clones. He knows they're, you know, spinning the truth on him, to put it nicely. And he's sort of maybe giving them enough rope to hang themselves with. But at the same time, he does basically seem like he's putting on blinders to a lot of this stuff. But it strikes me that he has a very singular point of view about this particular mission. And whatever he wants defines that vision. I mean, he spends, what, all of last episode and the episode before it talking about how they must do this and they must do that because Kenobi's forces depend on it, et cetera, et cetera. All the coordination that is going on in the broader battle. And as soon as they lose touch with Obi-Wan, and by the way, a communication disruption can mean only one thing, invasion. See, it did mean invasion here. They did invade, except it was the Republic invading, and it's disrupted afterwards, so it's correlation, not causation. But whenever he finds out that, you know, Obi-Wan, they're not going to be able to get in touch with him again to find out what to do about the rest of the attack, and Rex flat out asks, you know, shouldn't we try to coordinate with Obi-Wan? He's like, no, you know, we won't be able to get in touch with him. We must go on as we want to proceed, or as we plan, whatever it is that he says. And it's kind of like, okay, at this point, when it fit your view of what you wanted to do, you were fine with coordinating. Now, all of a sudden, when there's something stumbling in your way, screw coordination, you're going to do it your way. It's a very myopic view. You see the same thing in terms of him having this very, very kind of focused perception on his view of what the battle should be. When we see, I guess it's bombs being dropped by the Umbarans outside the airfield where they're stationed or where they've just taken over, Krell refers to the Umbarans as blasted insurgents. Okay, these are the defenders. You're the invader, Krell. They are defending. It goes back to that whole concept throughout history of, you know, one man's terrorist is another man's freedom fighter and all that kind of stuff. But he certainly has a distinct view, and it's like if something doesn't fit within that view, he just ignores it. He puts on the blinders and marches blindly forward. Only other thing that I would point out for this episode, and it's sort of a barely fitting into continuity corner type of thing, that Separatist ship that they go up to, that supply ship, is a new design. We do get a new design for an Umbaran support ship, which also goes unnamed. And I was going to ask, because I'm not actually certain, is this the first time, or is this arc the first time that we've seen Rex with his armor with the visor, very much like Cody's visor in Revenge of the Sith, or did I just not notice it previously?
No, this is the first time, and it was interesting, that one mission where they all went outside and they were talking to each other in the dark. It looked like everybody had been given a pair of the visor macro binoculars, so that was kind of interesting to see.
We also, I guess, get that new hologram technology, the Umbaran hologram tech, that looks like it uses essentially Legos to create the images, which was really cool looking. I kind of wonder if they had to create any kind of new model of Obi-Wan for that, or if they can apply some kind of texture to Obi-Wan to cause him to look like that instead of having to completely redesign it for that one scene. Very cool look, though.
I really dug the hologram technology, because they have a hologram technology, but it's so much different than, say, what the Republic has kept, because we see in episode one that they still kind of have that, you know, hologram that kind of shoots out, that has the lines and the waves going through it. You know, we saw it that the, you know, really specifically at the point, the landing at Point Rain, where you know, Anakin's going over the plan, and you can see the waves going through the huge you know, compound that they were going to invade. But I like the fact that it kind of brought me back to my past, because you remember back in 1999 when the only way you could get digital cable was to have a satellite dish, and then you'd go over to your friend's house and you would use their digital cable, and every time you turn the channel, it would be a black screen, and then all of a sudden the pixels would come and together and put a an image together. That's what it kind of reminded me of, you know, kind of turning the channel back in old 1999 on a digital channel, and all the pixels came together to form an image.
It definitely looked like a unique style of doing holograms. And, you know, they did the same thing, you know, when you had the Geonosians in Attack of the Clones, you get that red hologram thing. They like varying technology, so it's something that feels familiar and yet is a little bit different. And we haven't really seen as much of that, or at least as defined examples of that, it seems like, within the Clone Wars cartoon series. This really stood out to me, maybe because, you know, we were trying to follow what Obi-Wan was saying, so we were paying more attention to the technology instead of it being in the background. But it was pretty cool. And new.
I liked how it kind of felt like it kind of came together. It looked very almost watery. So sticking with the Umbaran theme of their technology and things being very organic or based off of the life around them. At least it wasn't a bunch of fireflies that came together.
When you're done using them for holograms, you can make soup out of those cubes.
All right. Before we get to everyone's voicemails, we got a preview. And this week, the preview that they have up at StarWars.com is a snippet of the conversation between Rex and Krell, which kind of goes over the end of their discussion in this episode, where they're talking about Fives and Jesse being court-martialed. But apparently the decision has been reached by Krell that court-martialing, or Rex has tried to use this argument to try to save them, that court-martialing takes time and it would just be a waste of resources. Krell decides that he's right, it would be a waste of resources, they're going to be executed. But he wants Rex to assemble a group, or assemble some troops to carry out his orders. Now this, I think this is going to be the head. It's going to be interesting to see how they work this out. Is Anakin going to arrive back just in time? Is Obi-Wan going to show up just in time to save the day? Or is there going to be a mass refusal and a full-on near mutiny when this tries to get carried out?
Whatever happens, I just want Krell to get some sort of horrific death, because he's just such a jerk. And that scene, he's so cold, so calculating, and it's just like, no, it's more efficient if we just set up a firing squad. And it's just like, someone needs to kill him, and I really hope it's the clones. I don't really care at this point. Just Anakin could show up. He needs to die. And if he doesn't, I'm going to be kind of upset. I feel like there's no redeeming this guy at this point.
Yeah, I'm expecting something big next week where it's either going to be some kind of massive rebellion by the clones or Anakin comes back. I mean, something's going to have to deal with Krell, of course. But I like the fact that they've essentially set us on a ticking clock now. Because, in a sense, as we head into next week, if there is an execution that has been ordered, there's got to be some clone somewhere that will follow Krell's order and actually do it, or that Krell will do it himself, or at least try to do it himself, which means that these two guys are on borrowed time now. So anything that happens next week has that ticking clock angle hanging over it that makes it feel all the more tense as we get into it. And it's interesting to see that this supposedly well-reasoned character who must stick with the plan is just seemingly making up his ideas on the fly about what to do with these guys. It's almost like as he's having that conversation with Rex, he's talking to himself and convincing himself, taking himself dot to dot to dot, to get to the conclusion of, ah, well, I guess we'll just have to kill them. And he's saying it in that the wording of, you know, essentially defective products. So, yeah, something's got to give somewhere. It's kind of difficult to see the idea of the clones being able to take him down, but then again, that could presage, you know, Order 66. We haven't seen much of him with the multiple lightsabers, and I seem to recall a part in the preview where it's essentially dropping down from up high and landing with the multiple lightsabers out, or with the two double-bladed lightsabers. Maybe that's showing up in the near future. I don't know. I'm very excited to see what next week is going to do, even if it's something as simple as he winds up dying in a quote-unquote accident. Anakin shows up and asks what's going on, and Rex is like, oh, that was an accident. Why are there blaster marks on him? they all misfired at the same time, sir. Because I could see Anakin being one to accept whatever it is that Rex says, and accepting Rex's judgment if it's Rex that winds up being the one to bring Krell down one way or the other. What would make for some dynamic storytelling, but and would set up some stuff for later, but would be a groaner and a for next week, would be if either Fives does get executed, which I doubt, though it's always possible, or we wind up instead seeing that Krell survives, whether he goes to the dark side or whatever, but Krell makes it out of here and is able to come back as perhaps a villain later, or even perhaps has the Jedi Council, even against maybe Obi-Wan and Anakin's opinions, but maybe the Jedi Council saying his actions are justified in this particular case and he gets to stay on as a general. Any type of situation like that that leaves Krell in play makes for some interesting possibilities later. But I got a feeling he's going to be one of these one-and-done, one-story-arc-and-done kind of characters. He's built up too much animosity at this point.
Well, to part of your point, they did show that scene where Krell comes out from high above and lands with the double lightsabers. This is when he killed that flying insect creature, and he kind of talks bad to the clones. Are you guys ready to play? You know, he jumps up and he slices that thing in half and he lands like that. So they did show that, as far as I can remember. Now, I think you guys are missing a big point here, which would be that Fives, Jesse, and Hardcase all knew that this was going to happen. They even say in the line, you know, we're going to take whatever consequences happen because we're saving our fellow soldiers, our fellow clones, our brothers. So they might walk willingly into being executed. And we already seen that there's clones like Dogma who are following Krell's orders blindly. And, you know, Nathan, you mentioned maybe because he's a new clone and he's not had time to develop his own personality and his own sense of worth. So they may, in fact, get killed, you know, and that might be one of the straw that breaks the camel's back when it comes to Captain Rex just following blindly. And it may be something that goes into his story of what might actually happen to him, because you know, we all said before he's not in episode 3. So I think that there is the possibility that Rex would tell these clones, look, you're to be executed in the morning, and they say, fine, execute me. That's what it costs, you know, Hardcase gave his life for the greater good. If that's what it takes and we saved our brothers, then go ahead and shoot us. And, you know, that may not be the reason why the clones, you know, maybe Rex might, after they get executed, maybe Rex would say, hey, you know, let's get after this guy now. You know, he did this, you're next. You know, what's to stop him from executing you? If he tells you to shoot your foot off and you don't want to do it, what's to stop him? You know, so this might be the straw that breaks the camel's back, but just in a different way than what I think you guys are thinking of.
Okay, so we've got the possibility that the clones will refuse and Krell will try to take matters into his own hands. We've got the possibility that the clones will actually carry it out and Fives and Jesse will accept their fate. Here's a third possibility for you. A few of the clones engineer an escape. Jesse and Fives desert. Krell pursues. Therefore, he lives. And we have a possible future story arc involving the Krell hunting deserting clones.
That would certainly be cool.
I doubt it'll happen, but that would be an interesting line for them to go down.
Well, I mean, leaving the rest of the war so I can go find these two deserting clones.
Well, it's
but
funny
can't
that you
see him doing that.
It's funny you mention that, though, because next week, I think it is next week, or sorry, next week, I guess the next story arc after this one is over with is the one that is adapting, from what I can tell, it's adapting a Henry Gilroy Clone Wars comic arc called Slaves of the Republic. And one of the things that was noted in that comic series that was of interest is, as Ahsoka learns more about Anakin's background as a slave and sees the slavery going on in that particular story, because it's not just about, you know, slaves of the Republic in terms of clones, there are actual slaves on Zygera within the story, there's talk about, well, when the war ends, what Ahsoka wants to do to devote her time to is going out and helping save slaves everywhere, and that Anakin would want to be there as well to do that. It sort of opens up that door. If that kind of a conversation were to wind up in that new story arc that we're going to see soon, I mean, they're even naming it Slaves of the Republic right after the comics themselves. If they stick very closely to it, and some of the screenshots seem like they are in a lot of ways, then I could see them maybe using an idea like that, maybe not here, but maybe later, the idea of desertion as sort of a what could happen to save some of these clones on into the future. I mean, they're getting into their fourth season here. At some point, they need to start opening up those escape hatches if any of these characters are going to wind up surviving and either not become Imperial Stormtroopers at the end, or in the case of the Jedi, not get killed by Order 66. I could see that maybe now that we're in season four. I doubt it this time around, but you know, you bring up an interesting point of what could start to open up new possibilities for these characters.
Isn't that unusual? Did we know that Slaves of the Republic was taking place around the same time as the Clone Wars? And how unusual is that for them to actually adapt a comic and bring it into the Clone Wars? You know, is that pretty unusual? And I wonder if they're going to keep doing that.
Well, see, here's the thing. Henry Gilroy used to be one of the lead guys on the Clone Wars TV series. He may even still be. I'm actually not 100% certain on that. But for seasons one and two, at least, he was one of the head guys in the writing room or whatever you want to call it. And it was his ideas of the whole, let's stick, you know, them in carbonite and have Ahsoka ordered not to go, but then she sneaks aboard anyway and winds up in carbonite, and they're using that to get past the enemy lines and all that stuff. He came up with those ideas for season one. They weren't done. He wrote the comic that actually used the story, only to wind up having it turn around that they then took that idea and used it for the Citadel arc here. This is another comic series directly based, not in other EU, but directly based on this cartoon series that has virtually no other EU impact whatsoever. Hardly any of the stuff based specifically on this cartoon series has any impact on anything else whatsoever, except maybe Karen Travis's No Prisoners. It's by Henry Gilroy, though, which makes me wonder, are these ideas they came up with earlier and they couldn't do, so he made the comic story out of that? Or is it maybe that, you know, you flip it around, maybe seeing the experience with the previous instance of this, where they took an idea comic-wise and made it into the series, maybe that sort of opened them up to possibilities of looking at those materials. There aren't a lot of them. There's that. There's Hero of the Confederacy. There's very little in terms of those spin-off stuff that Gilroy wrote as those, as that supposedly ongoing series that didn't last very long. But it'll be interesting to see how they adapt it. There's a website called Lightsaber Rattling. It's one of the big Star Wars blogs out there. Pete Morrison runs the thing. Really fun website to check out. But he's done a side-by-side comparison of screenshots that they've released from that episode. I think it was in Insider. And the comic panels from the comic book itself. And they are incredibly close. The biggest difference, of course, being the time frame here, because you said, you know, did we really know that Slaves of the Republic took place at this part of the Clone Wars? No, we didn't, because Slaves of the Republic was back in the earlier costume days when Ahsoka was presumed to still be 14 years old. It'll be interesting to see how they adapt that storyline, not only for cartoon form, but also for essentially, what, 1 year, 2 years later in the overall course of the Clone Wars. It's going to be one I'm going to have to be paying very close attention to for Continuity Corner, to say the least.
All right. So more exciting things coming to the Clone Wars after this arc wraps up. All right. Now, we did get quite a few voicemails this week, so let's jump right in and see what your guys' thoughts are on Plan of Descent.
Hi, this is Evan. Where I think the series is going is, I don't think Pong Krell is going to kill Captain Rex 7-5, because after the episode ended, he didn't do that, so it's going to be in the next episode, and Anakin's going to come back and do something. But it got a little too familiar when they blew up that supply ship. It just got too familiar with Season 1 and clones laying down their own lives to win battles and year-on-year seasons. That happened in Supply Lines and back in Season 1. I think Pong Krell's getting darker and darker. That's what I was thinking when I was watching this episode. But it also felt like a little too thinking that the clones can just, hard case and fives are spinning around, almost crashing into each other last episode. Oh, now they're playing like perfect Umbar and Starfighter pilots. I just didn't get that. And I also didn't get when Fives was like, this can't get worse. Like, when I saw that in the commercials, I was just like, okay, that's obviously a battle sequence. no, they're on an, they're in an airbase. But when I saw Dump and Dogbert, those guys seem to be a lot different than when we first saw them. They seem to be following General Krell's footsteps. That's probably a bad idea, and they shouldn't do that. And what I think will happen to Captain Rex is probably Anakin will probably forget about him in this like lightsaber fight with Krell. He'll get Fives will probably just drill out somehow. Since you know, Arcturian has all this like Arcturian gear. If you want to call it, they'll probably desert. And I also loved the graphics on that space battle. It was just really detailed. But I remember when Fives and Jesse were coming back after they blew up the supply ship, the munificent frigate that was under there, it looked like back in like early season one, like season one, episode six, Downfall of Droids, the animation wasn't as good. That's what I thought about these. It was just blue, and it didn't look good. Nope, that didn't distress me. But what I really liked was the Captain Rex and the visor and all those clones. It was like, oh, Captain Rex, rangefinder and the macro binoculars. Da, 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 da. They call off the attack. Oh, okay. Fives, Jesse, and Harkin don't have them. They're back in the airbase. I'm like, how easy are those things to take off? Like, back in season one, I guess they did that. The commando droids. And the Umbaran language, I seem to sort of make it out. It was, like, ADs and ABs, like, with, weird noises, sort of. Yeah. That's pretty much what I like. That's pretty much the episode. And I also didn't get, like, the fortune thing. Didn't get it. I usually get the fortune thing. And I think the preview thing where the guy's like, we're saying Captain Rex, send his platoons to retreat. At the beginning of last episode, I just thought it was like the preview of Darkness of Umbara and the General mixed together, added with a little new stuff, which made it too long. So that's really what I thought about the episode. Thanks for a great podcast. Hopefully you get a good... I'm hoping to hear your podcast this week. Bye.
You know, Evan, it's really good to hear a young Star Wars fan call in, and it's really good to hear that you like our show too. But you know, I usually try to watch the shows with my son, and he pretty much had a lot of the same observations you had. You know, about Krell kind of going to the dark side and how heroic the clones were to, and you know, as Nathan had said, the parallel between Anakin and Hardcase, blowing up the supply ships and stuff like that. So it's really nice to hear a young Star Wars fan come out and give his opinions.
How's it going, RFRM? This is Ben Davis on the forums calling in with some thoughts on this past Clone Wars, the Plan of Descent. But one of the first things I noticed about this episode was that it had some really good animations and some really, really exceptional visuals. I mean, first off with Krell and Kenobi with their little holo chat there, Krell had some really good facial animations. Better, I thought, than previous episodes. I mean, not to narc on the other two episodes, but at some points when they focused in on Krell's face, it didn't look like what he was saying matched up with the way his mouth moved. I don't know, maybe that was just me. But Tup, like one of the other things that we got to see, kind of, was that Tup was the clone with the awesome top knot. And I thought that was nice. I mean, nice to see the clones had some variation with all the different styles of shaved heads that get pretty repetitive over a while. But when all the clones like when Jesse and all the clones were by the starfighters, Jesse called out part of my theory on Krell, if you could call it theory, with his line of his desire for victory has blinded him to the fact that there are lives at stake, which flows pretty well with what I said, that Krell gives the impression that he's one of those people, or humanoids in his case, that he thrives on the battle, the destruction, and the chaos, and he doesn't care about anything else, I guess, except for victory. But speaking of Krell, it seems to me that obviously, he doesn't like plans that aren't his or he didn't come up with. You know, he's, as we've seen so many times before, he isn't very big on outside input. But the greatest part of this episode, I thought, was the two movie references we've got, and maybe there was another one and I missed it, but the two movie callbacks we got, with the first one was Hard Case's ever-growing difficulty of controlling the Umbaran fighter, and Krell calls in and asks, what's going on? Fives pushes the one clone out of the way, and he pulled a Han Solo with assuring him everything's fine, just a slight fighter like a malfunction or decrypting the fighters. That was great. I loved that whole scene, and it was nice that they didn't just copy and paste what Han said from Episode 4 in there. I know I think it was either Barrett or Arnie mentioned that in the general or the general podcast, and. See, the other movie reference was Fives telling of Anakin's quote-unquote plan from hitting the ship's reactor from the inside from back in Episode 1, so those are nice. And back with Hardcase and Fives and the Umbaran fighter, I loved how Hardcase covered what happened with the fighter when Krell came to investigate. I mean, if that was me, I would not have been able to keep a straight face. I mean, I could barely keep a straight face just watching. It was so funny. And I'm surprised that Krell actually bought it. I mean, aren't Jedi supposed to be able to tell when somebody's lying to them? Or, has that just been hyped up over the course of all of this? I mean, you know what? Krell didn't look like he cared much either way anyway. But the next big thing, I mean, we all knew it had to happen, was we had to lose one of our clones. And, I mean, I both hated and admired what they had Hardcase do. I mean, I hated it because we're losing Hardcase. He's one of the great, he's one of the best clones we've got right now. And I admired it because it reminds me of what Heavy did all the way back in Rookies, which further supports how similar they are, or were, I guess, to use the proper term. And next week, Rex is going to have he's going to have a really big choice, or a really big obstacle to get over. And, I mean, it wouldn't be really spoiling anything. It's on Cartoon Network, for sort of free for anybody to see. But Krell had Rex draw up a firing squad to execute Fives and maybe Jesse too. So which leads me to ask, what do you guys think is going to happen with that? I mean, is this going to be the way Fives is going to bite it? I mean, is he going to be executed, or will Rex step in? Or what do you guys think is going to happen? I really hope this isn't how they have Fives go out. But if they did, I think it would be a really good catalyst for Rex and the other clones, to see how the Jedi are and how this war really is and everything. But and with Jesse and that line of back there, I'm still waiting for Krell to fall off his rocker, so to speak. I mean, and we've still got one episode which may or may not be aptly titled "Carnage of Krell." So. No, I mean, I'm going to be eager to see what happens. I'm going to be eager to see a Krell goes bonkers and Rex and company have to come up with a plan to take care of him. I don't know, I won't get off on a whole other tangent, but as always, I love the podcast. Thank you for all the work you guys do in bringing it to us every week, and I look forward to hearing your guys' thoughts on this episode. Thanks. Bye. Hello, Republic Forces Radio Network. This is Anthony from Massachusetts, Raekwon on the forums again, talking about Plan of Defense. And this episode absolutely blew my mind. It was action-packed from beginning to end, and there were a bunch of moments that were oddly funny, especially with the AT-RT drivers. The way Mr. Butler and Jen were talking about how they just get massacred. They don't have that many walkers anymore. They're all just walking around, riding on each other's walkers. It's kind of hilarious. And there were so many callbacks, like the callback to the Death Star conversation. You know, when Han Solo is in the prison block with Fives in the hangar when Hardcase is going crazy. And especially when Fives mentions episode one, where he's talking to Anakin about how he blew up a droid control ship. And especially how nobody likes Dogma at all. The clones just don't like Dogma, which is understandable. And I was really surprised that, well, actually not really that surprised, that they were planning to execute Fives and Jesse, being a Republic Commando fan. That didn't really surprise me, because it was one book, I believe it was True Colors, where they attempted to execute a rogue ARC trooper with covert ops clones. That was another nice callback. And I was sure that Jesse was going to die instead of Hardcase, because Jesse didn't know how to fly a starfighter. We already saw Hardcase and Fives fly them. But it was really nice. As much as I liked Hardcase, it was nice to see him go out the way that he did. But it begs the question, why did the clones with the big guns always have to die? And it's a really intense cliffhanger that they left us off with this week, and I'm really excited for next week. Once again, thanks for the show. You guys do a great job, and look forward to seeing your comments on this episode. Thanks.
I see a lot of Republic Commando throwbacks into this, too. I don't know if it's coincidental just because we're working with like the clones a lot, and we're just kind of touching on similar issues, or if this author or writer happens to be a fan of this, of Karen Travis's work, or just any of the Clone Wars stuff that touched on the clones. But I feel like there's a lot of stuff that calls back to stuff in Republic Commando, and like even just Krell himself. I remember them talking about, I think it was Quinlan Vos, being really just nasty to the clones and treating them like numbers and just throwing them at the enemy and not caring if they die. And I'm liking seeing this, because it's like the book is coming to life. And even if it's not quite the same, it's similar enough that it's really, really fun.
Are you saying, Jen, that this is kind of like, just to crystallize your thought, that when you're saying that it's kind of like what we see in the EU with the Republic Commandos, is that the clones are kind of interacting more with each other than they are with the Jedi and taking orders, that they're kind of thinking for themselves independently, and you're finding that they all do have personalities, something like that? Because I haven't read any of the books.
That and them not liking the Jedi, and some of them having loyalty issues, and just a lot of this stuff is very similar to what was in the books.
And we should all remember that the clones are not just numbers. There are letters in their names, too. The one that's being referred to, though, in particular, he mentioned with True Colors, that's Sol, that's A30. And Sol was the one who actually, in those books, was bringing up the fact that, you know, whether we're talking about what was almost done to him, or Tavo, who was another clone that he had known, who had gotten executed by Republic Intelligence, he's the one that sort of brings in the knowledge that, look, they're not just going after those who desert. If you are someone as a clone who disagrees and goes against orders, if they believe you cannot be trusted, you're considered defective, you're just killed outright. Which is basically what we saw Krell say in that brief little tidbit we got from next week. So I'm not sure if it's a direct takeoff from what you see in Republic Commando. I mean, it'd be very easy to derive some of the same ideas when looking at similar situations, but certainly it's nice to see them not shying away from that more, from exploring the more adult issues that are inherent in the idea of a clone army, the Jedi as pacifists turned warriors, and all that stuff. Because Star Wars is such a great place for that rich exploration. When all we do is go for the comic relief, like we do, say, nomad droids, we kind of do it a disservice. There's a place for that sort of thing, but it's not within the confines of this 3-year major galactic conflict. This is the Clone Wars. It needs to have some of those moral questions. Otherwise, why tell a tale dealing with wars in general at all, unless all you're doing is going for the flashy special effects, and in this case, animation?
Hello, this is Caleb. I'm calling to give a review on of season 4, episode 9, Plane of Descent. I actually really liked this episode because it was really like a character building episode. Some of the plot was mediocre and there's a bit of like not so much intensity, but I really liked it because there was a lot of really intense character building about how at the beginning airstrikes, just the graphics were great. How but at the beginning you really got a really definite definition of Krell. He was in charge, didn't even listen really to all the other clones. He was just like, okay, whatever. He said, we're going to do the suicide mission, even though he seemed to know it. He just didn't care. He was treating him like droids, basically, just go and sack the fortress, just do what I say, like a separatist, basically. It was really interesting. And then he goes up in the tower, and I just love the graphics of, like, the, like, glowing jello cube, and then there's Obi-Wan. It was just amazing graphics. I love that. Very interesting. Made you watch the episode. The glow, especially in contrast to the dark outside, and then kind of the warbly voice. Obi-Wan had kind of like that guy from the Citadel trilogy. Just made it all alien, really defining that the Umbarans were different from the Republic. And then how I love the part how when Hardcase is in the fighter, that kind of looks like a dragonfly. I really like those. And he's almost totally trashing, and they're like, it's a mechanical failure. Yeah, And then he's just giving excuses, and Rex is looking on, and then Krell looks out the window, and you just see like the door melting. Goes, oh, I'm going down there. It's like, you're not going to do that in the first place. That'd be the first thing you do. So it's really proving that he's a leader, not really a leader, actually, but just stays back, just like the separatists. Anyway. That's all for now. Goodbye.
I said this is a big character building episode, and you know where I thought I was actually going with it initially was some of these situations that are very intense are also, I mean, to be honest, they're also very cliche. I mean, okay, they are going to debate whether or not to follow the orders, and the one who is really in charge is going to give tacit approval, and, you know, I can't cover your back when you come back, and that sort of thing. And, okay, well, when it's successful, you know, he's still got to be punished. And in the process of, hey, he's still got to be punished, it's, no, sir, it was all my doing. No, he's trying to take credit just to put himself in the line of fire. It was really just us. It's a really cliche way that a lot of the episode tidbits, if you were to take the plot and break it down to smaller plot points, a lot of them are very cliche. They're just done very well in the way that they're put together, and that gives us something very intense. But a lot of that intensity, interestingly enough, you know, when you really break it down, it's coming from things that we should have seen coming so many miles away, because it's kind of the standard tropes, you know? Leave it to something like the Clone Wars to be able to take something that is a standard trope and turn it into something that's actually pretty good, because in a sense, that's what Star Wars has done with classical motifs all along.
Hello, Republic Forces Radio Network. It's Robert Darth Akari. Now, to add to my never-lengthening title, I can also be referred to as CC5206, as I'm now an official member of the 501st. Got my armor approved this week, so yay for me. So anyway, once again, thoughts on the most recent episode of the Clone Wars, Plan of Descent. May I please insert the obligatory Darth Vader, no, I had to do that, because poor Hard Case, darn it, I really liked him, oh well, and I'm really concerned about Mr. Fives as well, but although I'm beginning to get a possibility of an idea in my head as to where they might go with this, but, you know, we'll see what happens. And I think you guys sort of touched a little bit on it. It's like, you know, what's going to happen when Anakin gets back? Although I did do a little bit of thinking about this whole situation. And just to think about this, the ingenuity of Palpatine, you know, when he's coming up with all this. He's gone and taken Anakin's personal batch of clones, like you mentioned a couple times last episode. Those are his men. They've taken them away from him, and he's put them with the biggest jerk of a Jedi, and I'm using kind words because I know it's a family show, but let's, you know, you fill in whatever you like, for them to get a taste of what the other Jedi possibly could or are like. You can easily see where there would be a lot of 501st members who would be Order 66, Storm the Jedi Council. Sure, why not? Hey, we were all on Umbara. We saw what those, you know, what they did to us. Why not? Yeah, if the Chancellor says they're all going that way, why not take them all out? So, yeah, I think that this is his last step of the 501st training. Boy, is that clever. You know, he didn't become Supreme Chancellor and Emperor for nothing. So props to Mr. Palpatine. So, by the way, space battle, gorgeous. I'd almost put that up in the ranks of probably better than a lot of the ones in the movies. It is interesting. Once again, we've had another episode one callback with the Anakin told me the story about how he took down the droid control ship. Kind of interesting there. And once again, we have another clone doing a Han Solo-esque scene with the weapons malfunction, nothing to worry about. So kind of amusing how, you know, who knows what kind of crazy retconning George will put into the background of Han Solo. But anyway, otherwise, I just wanted to cover one quick thing, because I know you guys were talking about the whole thing of the armor for 501st members. Differences between season 1 through 3 and 4 forward, biggest things are the knee pads and elbow pads are no longer attached to the shins or to the forearms. The backs are different on the back plate is different. It no longer has the two lines and a single disc. And then obviously the helmets are different. So it's a completely new body model for all of our clones now. So interesting.
Well, I'd like to congratulate you, CC95206. Congratulations, getting into the 501st. I am currently making my armor that will be debuted at C6 next year. I'm going to keep that kind of under wraps right now. But it's going to be a unique armor to myself. But congratulations in the 501st. And you make a lot of good points. You know, we already had mentioned about the callbacks and them saying some lines from the story that we are familiar with, and they haven't, you know, in the last couple episodes, we're familiar with the lines, but they're not saying them verbatim, which I think is a good choice to make. But a lot of good points, and congratulations.
I would also like to extend my congratulations. I have never taken it upon myself to do any of the armor building. I've thought about it. I've also thought about doing the R2 builders thing, but I just look at the level of work that's involved, and for some reason that makes me cringe. I'll stick to the typing thing, I guess, with the timeline and everything. But congratulations, that is very cool to hear. Hopefully we'll see more about it on the forums. And I think you raise a good point about what is Palpatine doing in terms of pulling Anakin away. I was thinking maybe he's doing it in one of those ways where, you know, it's the idea of you throw him in there with attachments and you try to yank those attachments away to make him go darker. That maybe this is one of these things that's meant to be where, yeah, we're setting up the clones to be harmed, and that's going to remove some of these connections for him, so he is closer and closer to being willing to go to the dark side, where it's like all he has to depend on are, say, Obi-Wan, Palpatine, Ahsoka, and Padme, who we learn later, of course, that Palpatine already knew about. And you take that a step further, eventually you get rid of Ahsoka, presumably, or do something that removes Ahsoka from play. And of course, he's trying to separate him from and presumably get rid of Obi-Wan. So constantly narrowing it down, so the only people he can rely on is the one he's going to wind up having in jeopardy that'll be the leverage, and Palpatine himself. So I got to wonder if this is part of that bigger power play, or if this is something where the mission that Anakin's on is going to be an important one. It appears we're not going to see anything about the mission Anakin was on in that next story arc, The Slaves of the Republic arc, so hopefully at some point we'll get to find out where the heck Anakin was, but not so far, it seems like.
Yes, it's following along what we know of the Emperor, what he's doing, taking Anakin away from the things he loves to make him think more and more about losing them, you know, and it's inching closer to the dark side. But more to the point, or maybe not more to that point, but more to my point, this having General Krell go in there and, you know, kind of making these bad decisions where everybody's knowing he's losing a lot of clones, isn't it kind of going what we know about the Jedi Council too, kind of turning their head at questionable Jedi out there as long as they get the job done? You know, it's not just Anakin. It makes me feel better that it's not just Anakin out there that they know are kind of doing questionable things and they're turning their head because he's the chosen one. But it makes it seem like it's a more common practice that because that they're just kind of turning their heads to a lot of Jedi, you know, Quinlan Vos and now Krell, you know, that this is a practice of theirs. It all fits.
Hey guys, this is Will, aka Venator 1229 on the forums, calling about the most recent episode of Star Wars, The Clone Wars, The General. And once again, it does not fail to impress me. These episodes have been great, like the action, dialogue, everything. So I'm just going to make it quick here. I'm just going to address some things I thought were kind of cool. So let's start on the briefing room. I really liked how the hologram changed Kenobi's voice. Like, it was all computerized. I just love that. And the thing I want to address on is, it's all cube. Now, could this be that the Umbarians see, like, in cube form or something? Or are they just being fancy? Like, does their vision, like, make them see in cubes, and that's why it looks like that? Or, I don't know. Let's see what else. I have everything written down. So the Umbarans used to be allied with the Republic, but yet the clones don't know how to fly their technology. Like I thought clones were, like, taught how to fly, like, a lot of stuff and, like, how to adapt to certain things. And since the Umbarans used to be with the Republic, you'd think they'd share their technology with Kaminoans, that they teach their clones how to do things. But I don't know, like all throughout the series, I've been, like, not series, but our story arc, I've been kind of thinking that, like, wouldn't they have been taught how to fly them or something? I don't know. Let me see. And, like, I was not expecting that space battle. Like that was impressive. Like, the visuals were great, and I just loved it. Like, I was not expecting it, but I'm glad they did it, because it really, a lot of action. It was really cool. See what else. And flying into the hangar, like, it was just kind of cool, because it was like a repeat of episode one. I just loved it. Like, you could tell, like the way it was filmed and everything, it just looked just like episode one. And when they finally blew up the main reactor, when they flew out of the hole, like, it looked just like the Millennium Falcon flying out of the second Death Star after they blew it up in episode six. I just loved that. So Hardcase is dead, but I'm just really glad, like, how he went out, because I thought it was really cool. Like, he was just sacrificing himself, and he's just really loyal to the 501st. He's just like, yeah, like, live to fight another day, boys. Like, this one's for you guys, and just goes out, like, in a bang. Like, I thought Fives was going to die here. Like, I was seriously thinking that, but I don't know. But, oh, yeah. so something else about Hardcase, which I thought was really funny, was how when they first took off in the fighters, they're flying up to the space battle, and Fives and I think it was Jesse who went along with them. I forgot. We're talking about, like, how crazy this is, like, what they're doing. And then Hardcase just like, yeah, I'm just doing this for fun. Like, I just love that. I'm going to miss Hardcase. He was awesome. And then in the end, when Fives and Rex are being like debriefed by Krill, and Krill's like, you will now pay the price, and the episode just ends right there. Like, I thought it would have been really funny if Krill's like, you now pay the price, and then you hear, like, rifles being cocked, and he turns around and sees Rex and Fizer with, like, rifles pointing at him. He's just like, nope, Order 66 fires and kills them. I thought that'd be kind of funny, but I don't know. But yeah, that's really all I have to say about it. It was just great, and I'm really looking forward to next week and seeing how this whole court-martial thing will unravel. Like, I hope Anakin comes back soon and defends them, because, like, I mean, it's probably extremely unlikely that the two will be executed, because I doubt they'd show that on a show that's meant for kids, but still, I'm still kind of worried about those two. But that was a really good episode, and yeah, see you guys. Bye.
You know, I had that thought about whether or not they were able to fly the ships too at first, but if you'd notice, the problem that Krell has, or Krell seems to have most, isn't that this is Umbaran technology and you guys don't know how to drive it. It's more that those clones aren't pilot regulated. They're not pilots. So they haven't been trained to fly. So maybe that is part of the training that a pilot would get. But since they weren't pilots, they didn't receive that training. Of course, to the other side of your point, they were part of the Republic, so they should have known how to drive it. We used to be a colony of Britain, but I'm pretty sure if I went and tried to drive on the left side, I'd be screwed. So I don't think knowledge of where knowledge of driving is inherent, depending on who you are affiliated with.
Yeah, I'd say the same thing. I mean, there's NATO membership and UN membership that we're involved in, which you wouldn't necessarily expect someone who is another member of NATO or another member of the UN or whatever who would be specced out on our best war technology. You know, I mean, there's still some secrets that you keep. The two things that popped out at me on this, I'm both kind of sarcastic because that's, you know, just how I am half the time on the show here. But one, I'm thinking maybe Hardcase wasn't really out there for the sacrifice. Maybe he just really, really did not want to go back for Krell. He just couldn't put up with that guy anymore. It's like, forget it, I'll just kill myself because it's better than going back to that guy. Or, second point, it strikes me that for once the tattoos that give them that individuality kind of work against him, because if they didn't use the tattoos, then Fives and Jesse could just kind of slip back into the group and be like, who's Fives or Jesse? I don't know who you're talking about, and could have just hidden out and not been easy to round up had they wanted to. So, you know, for once their individuality is a pox on both their heads, so to speak.
Hey, this is Glenn Dooku on the forums on the occasion of that post. Calling in about the Clone Wars, and I got to figure out what the name of this week's episode was. Rather than echo what everyone I'm sure has said about how much they like this episode, Planet of Descent, you know, all the elements, the battle, and you know, the fighting, the planet, and all that stuff, I want to address a couple other things, which is, first of all, sort of the individuality of the clones. And, you know, we've seen this individuality, and, you know, we saw it like the very first episode of the series, with Yoda and said, well, I see you all as individuals, and, you know, we sort of have seen a little bit, you know, we've seen that, but mostly we've seen the 501st, and we've seen, you know, we've seen a very small amount of the clone army. And really, you know, they're supposed to be, you know, according to the Kaminoans, you know, very obedient, very, you know, very much more similar with less individuality. And I'm just wondering, is the individuality that we're seeing typical of clones, or is it visual among clones, and that we're sort of seeing the subset that is atypical, especially because Anakin is sort of the typical Jedi, very, you know, breaking rules, not following orders, is that we're in line that, you know, that he sort of set up his troops with this attitude and this leadership style, that if you put them under a strict leader like Krell, they're going to disobey what he says and get themselves in trouble. Of course, the issue of how did we get, Krell, who is just a horrible leader. I brought up last week, in the voicemail, and you guys just focused on the part one and part two kind of stuff, about how Krell, you know, he's a non-human, so maybe he doesn't, you know, feel about the other humans or other people the way that, you know, humans do, that his emotional attachments are different. But ignoring that part for now, you know, Nathan was brought up, you know, been mentioned time and time again, you know, they're are peacekeepers. They're not, you know, military geniuses or leaders or anything. You know, they don't know anything really about Jedi leadership, and the clones do. So you would think that the Jedi would sort of be instructed, you know, you're in charge, you know, you're the leader, you know, you're the best fighter, but the clones know what they're doing. They actually have military skill, and they've been training. They know what they're doing. You know, listen to them. I don't know where, you know, Krell was absent that day or whatever. But, you know, how did Krell get to be, you know, such a bad leader yet so successful? You know, it's like, he's entirely out of his league, leading clones against the Umbarans, which is sort of, you know, an enemy that is unlike anything that he's faced before, or in his, unlike anything his clones have faced before. you know, in the past, has he worked out that he's been successful because the strategy has worked in scenarios that were just the right scenarios for him, you know? Or is it now that his, you know, his troopers that he's had in the past has just been much more obedient, you know? Or, you know, they've just been the ones that have not been obedient, they just end up dead, so they can't complain to somebody. So this guy has no idea what he's doing. Is it sort of curious how he got to the situation a few years into the war where we have this guy who's just this really strict guy who has no idea what he's doing. He's changing, you know, what would have been a good plan to his own plan that says, hey, well, my plan is send all the troops in there and whatever, we'll send the, you know, numbers as a battle of attrition. I don't quite understand why you couldn't spare three out of how many ever they have to go fight, you know. Hey, you know, they're not pilots, but hey, it can't hurt to send three guys up there. I mean, what's the worst that could happen? I mean, they all get shot and dead and nothing happens. It's like, all right, you know, how much worse off would he be? If he's going to, you know, one did die, and if he decides to court martial and kill the other two before their final battle, he's in the same place he would have been anyway if they'd all died. So his tactics and reasoning doesn't make sense. And it's kind of already been over that before, but I just wanted to get it out there that, you know, how does, you know, there needs to be some sort of check on these Jedi, you know, that are leading, that they actually know how to lead and know what they're doing and how do you manage that. So it seems like that's something that's also sort of missing with the Grand Army of the Republic, and I look forward to hearing your guys find other interesting things about this episode to talk about. Bye. Oh, just sorry. Well, I'm sort of looking forward to next week and seeing how this episode and this arc all turns out with, you know, this court-martialing these guys, or if they're going to be, the preview on mine seems to imply that he's just going to kill them outright for, you know, their mutinous actions and not even get the court-martial. And we'll see what happens. I'm very interested to see what happens and sort of what happens in order to, is going to determine whether or not I like the arc or didn't like the arc. It's all going to sort of depend on this last episode.
Now, going back to one of the things that he said kind of early on there, you know, you've got this issue of, you know, aren't Anakin's clones sort of a unique subset as far as how much individuality they have? And that is certainly something that Filoni has said about the development of Rex beforehand. He was going to give Rex a little bit more personality, particularly as they went along, because of being there with Anakin. And of course, you know, yes, we see individualized clones and such in the EU elsewhere, but in those cases, again, it's attributed to some specific individual, whether it's Cal Skirata or whoever else. There's always someone who was the impetus for creating that individuality, or I guess bringing out the individuality. So there's something to be said that maybe the rest of the clones out there that we are seeing off screen, or sorry, that we are not seeing because they are off screen, maybe those are the ones who are just sort of blindly following the orders, and we're only getting to see this little subset. But you could say, well, why don't we see more of those? Well, easy, because, you know, the more interesting ones are the ones that are thinking for themselves. So there could be whole legions out there not thinking for themselves, as far as we know. Unless someone were to say something directly about that in the series, we just sort of have that up there as a giant question mark, other than just what Filoni has said from underneath the big old hat.
All right, we want to thank everybody who called in and left us a voicemail. Remind you, you too could leave us a voicemail that may make it into our next episode. Just give us a call. I want to thank Jen, Nathan, and Barrett for joining me to talk about Plan of Descent, and we will see you all back next week for the Carnage of Krell.
See you next time.
This was great, Darth Rockstar. Stay away from four-armed Jedi generals. See you next time.
Yeah, well, catch you next time. I'm looking forward to seeing the red symbiote myself.
Thank you for listening to Republic Forces Radio Network. Remember, we want your thoughts on the next episode of the Clone Wars series. You can leave us a voicemail at 415-508-JEDI every week from the time the new episode airs, and voicemails received by 1 a.m. Sunday morning may be included in our next episode. You can find our reviews of previous Clone Wars episodes, as well as our summer series reviewing the classic droid cartoon series, at our website, www.republicforces.com. And be sure to listen to our other Star Wars podcast, Star Wars Action News, covering all aspects of Star Wars collecting, from figures to high-end collectibles to Star Wars Band-Aids. Republic Forces Radio Network is hosted by Jerry, Arnie, Dan, Jen, Barrent, and Nathan P. Butler of StarWarsFanWorks.com. Republic Forces Radio Network, RepublicForces.com, and Star Wars Action News are not affiliated with Lucasfilm or any other official Star Wars-related company. Star Wars and all that the Star Wars universe contains are copyright and trademark Lucasfilm Limited, and no infringement is intended. Republic Forces Radio Network is a production of Venganza Media Incorporated, copyright 2011, all rights reserved.
I'm just doing it for fun!
Yeah, stop talking about it now.
I hope it was all recorded so I can listen to it later.
It's all recorded, but it won't be entertaining enough to listen to later, except a lot of your cover lumps or something. What were your cover lumps about? I forget. And you need to, and you, Dan.
Is that everything Barrett says?
No, I was.
Oh, me!
If you haven't watched
was
the.
It, Nathan?
It was me.
Nathan cusses like a 7-year-old boy on a sleepover.
Woohoo! I'm just doing it for fun!
I really hope we never get to a point where one of the clones shows up with a wife again now that we're past the deserter, because if they have anything about Jango Fett in that episode, we're going to have an on-air discussion about what makes a brother-in-law to a clone, or a sister-in-law, or whatever, to a clone. She's got all these different brothers-in-law. No, I believe those are her cousins once removed. Thank you very much.
Oh. I'm just doing it for fun!
Hey, Rockstar. Arnie Wan Kenobi has his hands full. Same as us.
Yeah, he's moving.
Yes, he is.
Yes. And speaking of people with their hands full, we are... Yeah, I don't know where I was going with that. And I just lost my sheet. There we go. Sorry.
I'm just doing it for fun.
Mbaran. Mbaran Saga? I don't know. The Saga of Mbaran? I don't know where I'm going with that. This week, we're going to... Yeah, my head's so not in this now. Sorry, you guys.
It's going to be the funniest show of the season.
It's going to be freaking horrible. Last week's was good.
I'm just doing it for fun!
Is that a little bit better?
You sound pretty far away now.
I'm on the... God, there's no pleasing you people.
You didn't sound garbled to me.
Yeah, you sounded fine to me.
Well, I heard a lot of...
Let me change the angle of the microphone.
So you're hearing a lot of, like, early 90s rap?
Yeah,
exactly.
Is that any better?
Yes.
You're fine. Let's rock. Rockstar. Oh, see?
All right.
I'm just doing it for fun!
I don't think you're allowed to talk about 1999 because Jen wasn't born yet.
you realize Nathan and Jen were like 3, so they don't remember that.
1999, I was junior in high school.
Shoot, I was starting college in late 98, so yeah. But yeah,
I'm just doing it for fun!
With this arc, I just hope that when, you know, if Krell winds up being the one to carry out executions because nobody else will, and he decides to stab Fives and Jesse through, he better not kiss him on the cheek first. And if they do, they better not air it, because that's discrimination against the bald white chick.
You know, we haven't had discrimination against the bald white chick since Sinead O'Connor. Zow, bing!
Damn you, Susan Powder! From a couple weeks
Susan
ago.
Susan Powder, but she kind of had more of a crew cut, Susan Powder. But, you know, have you seen some of the 14-year-olds and what they wear out there? You know,
I teach in a high school, man, so.
Yeah, that slave outfit is not very revealing compared to what some of these young girls are wearing out there. But I wanted to ask you guys.
I'm just doing it for fun!
You couldn't let that one go, could you, Nathan?
I just happened to run by because I want to make sure I reference Peter Morrison right, that is the guy behind Lights Are Rattling, because I get him and the Knights Archive guy confused sometimes. Fine.
We never want to miss an opportunity to make sure that Barron's wrong.
Yes.
Now. Oh. I just want to see it, and this brought it to mind. I mean, this not a direct response, but saying he wants to see Krell go bonkers. My brain flashed that old Nabisco 1980s candy. And that creepy old lady they used to use to advertise it. About, like, you eat the candy and you go bonkers! I would love to see a parody of that commercial with Krell. Anybody who wasn't around in the 80s is like, what is he talking about? Sorry, Jen.
I have not seen that commercial.
That's cruel.
I need to find it on YouTube now.
I'm just doing it for fun.
And there goes my side of the bed. All right.
You spend all your time with your Clone Wars friends and not with me.
Oh, we stay up too late. Kids wake up having nightmares and take my spot.
Oh.
Buggers.
I hear Nathan P. Butler in my sleep.
I'm just doing it for fun.
I don't understand. Everybody sees the Death Star reference and they see the episode went for... Did nobody else see the scene where Krell put his hand tenderly on Rex's shoulder and said, I hate sand? Sorry. Jen, go ahead.
I'm just doing it for fun.
Now, I wonder is who gets to have the Han Solo line next week? And will it be something like Rex and Fives are having a tender moment and Rex says, don't do that, my hands are dirty, and Five asks why he's trembling. And sorry.
Well, right before the execution, well, I love you, I know.
I'm just doing it for fun.
I think we could tell that the writer of this arc is definitely a Han Solo fan.
But aren't most of the best lines from Han Solo, though, when you really think about it, you know, from episode one? You know, he says a lot of good lines. It's an interesting smell you have here.
I mean,
He wasn't in episode one.
I'm sorry. In episode four.
It's like a... no, he wasn't in it.
Coruscant. Yes, but like my... aren't most of the best lines from Han Solo, really? You know, I can arrange that. You know, kissing a Wookiee and all that. So he's got some of the best lines.
I'm just doing it for fun.
You know, are we talking about the Jedi Council? Sure, you might have to cut that last part out. But...
Or Penn State?
You think?
We're talking about Jedi Council or Penn State, perhaps?
I'm just doing it for fun.
Well, I don't know about Quinlan Voss, because, you know, of course, Quinlan Voss, he's made into that in the EU stuff, but in this series, he kind of sounded like a beach bum, kind of like hippie dude. If I remember correctly from, what was it, Evil Plans, I think it was, that he was in, or whichever one it was where he's chasing down.
Well, I'm glad you remember it for such an unrememberable performance.
Yeah, Barrett was more concentrated on how much he loved Sai's noodles.
Yes, I love Sai. I still think... Ugh, never mind.
You're going to stop now because you're going to do another voicemail.
Never mind. Arnie was like, you're wrong. I'm right.
I'm so sending that to him.
Nice.
I shall double my efforts. The Emperor is not as forgiving as you are. Okay, Rockstar?
I'm just doing it for fun.
You know, the Emperor's got to be manipulating stuff because his old name in the original drafts was COS space DASHIT. His name literally was Cause the Shit.
The shit.
No, his name, Cause the Shit. That's what Lucas named him in the earlier stuff. Cause the Shit. On purpose.
He causes the shit to go down.
Exactly. That was his name.
That's awesome.
The only thing is, like, he's just joking. No, that was his name. Cause the shit, bruh.
I'm just doing it for fun.
This ain't a regular Shasta. This is President's Choice. You know what I'm saying?
No, I have no idea what you're talking about.
Saying, no.
I'm just doing it for fun.
Have you decided what's going to happen with next arc and Darth Maul's arc?
Darth Maul's arc is the last one of the season.
Yeah.
Because
you know what? My spot's assured. You guys can fight it out. I don't give a
shit. I was going to say, people put their hats tip their hats out. Jen said she would tip out. I said I would tip out because Nathan has to be on the show and Arnie has to be on the show.
Well, if Jen's out, then she has to call in and we'll make a theme song for Estrogen Avenue.
We're going to rock down to Estrogen Avenue. Are you thinking of putting a fiver together for the Darth Maul one?
Yeah, because it's not fun enough editing a 3-hour freaking show with four of us.
So you're not
That's the future.
Yeah, Maul's not until the end of the season, so
we'll have flying cars and stuff by then. I don't need to worry about it. So,
well, I just want to say one thing. I got screwed last season because
I don't need to know about that.
I was not on Savage Opress's thing. I sent an email to everybody.
Once again, I don't want to know.
I'm just doing it for fun.
I'm going to call in with the worst voicemail that you've ever heard, Dan. That's all I'm saying. I'm going to make
it 9 minutes long, and then he's going to come back on it. He's going to and he's going to talk in circles. He's going to tell you who he is on the forums about 8 times.
So wait, it's going to be like he's on the show?
Precisely. He's going to make some comments and some swears
with
that have to be cut.
Though.
I'm just doing it for fun.
So I want to thank Jen, Nathan, and the frog in my throat.
I'm just doing it for fun.
This is the part where you say goodbye. This is where you say goodbye first, Jen.
Have a good night, guys. That sucks. I'm sorry. Can I try that again?
Sure.